This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Newton Minow, is the man who first described TV as a vast wasteland. He used those words in a speech to the National Association of Broadcasters in 1961, shortly after President Kennedy appointed him commissioner of the FCC. During Minow's tenure, the U.S. launched the first communications satellite, Telstar, and TV manufacturers were required to include UHF channels on all sets. Minow later served as chair of PBS and is now head of the Carnegie Corporation and a professor of communications law and policy at Northwestern University. In the new book, Abandoned in the Wasteland, Minow and co-author Craig LeMay discuss a subject a Senate panel wrestled with today: should children's programming be regulated, and if so, how? Earlier this week, President Clinton endorsed the idea of a V-chip, an electronic chip that would allow parents to screen out programs coded as violent. Minow is an advocate of the V-chip.
I think it gives parents control. That's where the control should be. It should not be strictly in the hands of the broadcaster. It should not be strictly in the hands of the child. I think a parent needs to have one hand on the control stick, particularly where small children are involved, and the V-chip accommodates that. It transfers control to the parent.
Then you've got the problem of devising the coding system. Who do you think should come up with the code
and decide? Should not what, be,
and then rate the programs.
Should not be the government. The coding should be done, I think, in multiple ways. I think there should be one code perhaps done by the PTA, another by church groups, another by any group that the parent values opinions. I think that what we want to have is a multiplicity of rating services, and a parent can choose which one to follow.
Have you met anybody in the television industry who supports the V-chip?
Very few. There are people in the cable business who support the V-chip, and there are people in the manufacturing business who support the V-chip. I think there probably are some silent people in the television business who support it, but many of them have done, in my opinion, an unpardonable thing by saying the V-chip is unconstitutional. And my answer to them is, if a V-chip is unconstitutional, so is a parent.
Why do you think that there are more advocates in cable than in broadcasting?
I think cable is less dependent on advertising than the broadcasters are. I think fundamentally the broadcasters are afraid that it will really hurt their advertising revenues.
Something else you recommend is that there be no commercials for programming geared to children under six.
Well, that's a view that Joan Cooney, who's an old friend who started Sesame Street, told me about, and she's absolutely right. Little children, small children, simply don't know the difference between a commercial and a program. They're incapable of knowing that difference. And I believe that where small children are concerned, let's say children under 4 years old, 5 years old, there should not be commercials which are designed to get them to get their parents to buy something.
Also, you write this about children's programming. You say that there should be a commitment to meet a specified standard of programming service for children on each channel, or the channel should forego public service to children and pay for their use of the spectrum. I want you to elaborate on that.
When broadcasting began in this country in the 1920s, Congress tried to figure out what to do, and it established a law which basically was a social contract between a broadcaster and the public. Under the law, the broadcaster is given the exclusive monopoly use of public property, a channel, in exchange for a promise to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. An element, of course, of the public interest is service to children. What has happened in the last few years, particularly in the 80s, is that half of that equation remained, the exclusive use of a public facility, but the other half of the equation, the obligation to provide public service, has been neglected and basically deregulated. Finally, in 1990, Congress did pass a law which requires that part of the obligation be service to children, but very little has been done to this date to spell that out. So what we're saying is broadcasters should be given a choice. Either fulfill your public interest obligations, or if you don't want to do that, then pay for the channel and the money will be used to provide service to children and to hook up the schools and libraries of the country. We think the bargain that was originally proposed in the 20s should be renewed in the 90s.
What do you think about some of the current congressional proposals to keep violent programs off the air while children might be watching?
Well, the Court of Appeals of the District of Columbia within the last couple of weeks has decided that such provisions are constitutional and consistent with the First Amendment. I think it is important. In fact, as we speak, there are hearings going on today in the Senate on various proposals dealing with this issue. And I think it is perfectly appropriate that some limits be placed on broadcasters producing violent programming when the fundamental bulk of the audience are children.
But if there was a V-chip, would that alleviate your concerns about what's
going on? Well, that would help a lot. I think you really need both. We now have a country where there are two parents, both of them are working. We have many millions of homes of single parents. It's pretty tough to be a parent in this world and have one hand on the television set all the time.
What constitutes censorship to you if the government starts interfering with what programs can be broadcast at which times?
I don't think that this would amount to censorship at all. If anybody wants to, first of all, you're dealing with what the law calls indecent. That's a technical term, indecent programming. And indecent programming can be on at a time when the bulk of the audience is not children. I don't think that's censorship. Anybody wants to see indecent programming can see it later.
If there was legislation that kept violent programs off the air during the hours that children were watching, I mean, who do you think should decide what constitutes violence and what the hours are? I mean, I know children who are awake much later than I am.
Well, I think that's the real dilemma. Also, children don't only watch children's programs. Children watch adult programs, and children are watching television at all hours, so it is a very hard one. I think there are studies that indicate when the bulk of the audience are children, right after school. There are very clear studies, and I know this is a delicate problem, but I don't think we should just throw up our hands and say we can't do anything about it.
So what were your children's favorite programs when you were the FCC commissioner?
Well, my children, my wife was very pretty strict. In fact, we were talking to the kids about this the other day. My children are grown now. We asked them what they remember about television. They were only allowed to watch an hour a day and 2 hours on Saturday and Sunday. And they
were strict.
Well, they turned out very well, I'll tell you that.
You know, I have to say, though, I think I turned out okay, and I watched a lot more than that. do you know what I mean? I just often wonder about that. You know, I watched at least a couple hours a night.
I don't think you were watching some of the things that are on now. If you took a look, if you take a look now, for example, at some of the talk shows that are on late in the afternoon when the kids come home, How I Slept with My Girlfriend's Mother, and all kinds of sexual masochism and bestiality, I don't think you'd say that today that would be the sort of thing that would benefit you.
So what were your children's favorite shows?
I think they loved the Disney programs. They loved the, this was before Sesame Street started, but they loved a lot of the children's programs, and there were many of them, Captain Kangaroo and others, all of which are gone.
Newton Minow is my guest, former FCC commissioner under JFK, former chairman of PBS, now chairman of the board of the Carnegie Corporation, and co-author of the new book, Abandoned in the Wasteland, Children, Television, and the First Amendment. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Newton Minow, co-author of the new book, Abandoned in the Wasteland, Children, Television, and the First Amendment. When you were the FCC commissioner in the early 60s, it was the tail end of the single sponsor era on television. For instance, the Texaco Star Theater era, where a show had one sponsor and that sponsor's name might even be included in the title of the show. And for many shows, that meant the sponsor called the shots. What did you think the end of that era would mean?
Well, sometimes that was good, sometimes that was bad. If you had something like the Hallmark programs or the Bell Telephone Hour or the Philco Drama Hour, it was a good idea to have the sponsor be proud of the kind of programming that it was producing. as the business changed and people began to buy eyeballs rather than programs, and rating points rather than programs, people lost the identity and pride that they had in a particular program. On the other hand, as we always say, there were instances where a gas company, for example, which was sponsoring a program, would not allow any reference to the gas ovens in the concentration camp. So there are two sides of that. But in many ways, I would welcome back the public-spirited companies as sponsors of major programs.
Your generation didn't grow up with television. When did you get your first TV?
The first television set I got was when I was in law school in the late 40s, early 50s. The minute I saw it, I knew that it was the most important invention, other probably than the atomic bomb of our time. If President Kennedy had asked me to be chairman of the SEC or the FTC or the ICC or the FPC, I would have said no. But I was so deeply interested in television, and the Kennedys knew that, that even though it was a tough time for me to go in the government, I knew this was a place where I had to have it take advantage of the opportunity to do something about it.
So you got your first TV when you were in law school. What did you watch?
I watched everything. At that time, the news on television, of course, was very sparse. It was 15 minutes of network news and watched the local news. Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, I was Bert Tilstrom's lawyer for many years.
He was the creator of the show.
He was the creator of the show and a marvelous man. I'm still a trustee for Burr. And there were many, many things in television that I loved. And I think today the reason I get so frustrated is that I love television. I'm not one of those people who turn their nose down to television. I love television. I think it's extremely important. One of the things wrong in the country is that the academic community and the intellectual community have turned their nose away from television. They regard television as beneath their importance.
What are some of your favorite shows on television now?
I liked the Mary Tyler Moore Show so much that I watch all the reruns. I'm just delighted with it. I loved All in the Family. I watch the reruns. I watch NYPD Blue. I watch CBS Sunday Morning. I watch all the news programs, the interview programs on Sunday morning that I can. I watch CNN very often to find out what's going on. And I'm a great radio listener as well, I should say. I'm a total listener to NPR.
Well, you mentioned National Public Radio. I'm sure you've thought a lot about funding for public broadcasting, a big controversial issue right now. What kind of funding system would you like to see to support public radio and television?
I would like to see a system based on what we've done in the past when we created land-grant colleges. In 1862, Congress passed the Morrill Act. A Republican senator from Vermont or New Hampshire, I forgot which, proposed it. As we sold off public lands, a certain percentage of the money went to create land-grant colleges. Now we are about to sell another form of public property, communications channels. The FCC in the last year has conducted an auction of channels which were used for cellular telephone service and other communication service, has received about $10 billion. That money is going straight smack into the Treasury, where it will last about 39 hours. What I want to do is take a percentage of that, let's say 3% of those funds, and just as the Morrill Act created land-grant colleges, use that money for public radio, for public television, for connecting all the schools and libraries in the country with the information highway, and that's what I would hope would be done, and I hope Congress, again in a spirit of bipartisanship, would see this as an extraordinary opportunity to use that money in an intelligent way.
You always talk about how you think that broadcasters should be more aware of serving the public interest. And you cite the 1934 Communications Act, which gives broadcasters free and exclusive use of broadcast channels on the condition that they serve the public interest. But as you point out, the public interest was never exactly defined, so nobody knows precisely what serving the public interest is supposed to mean in this context. What problems do you think broadcasting has run into because of that?
Well, I think that it is not an easy problem, but I think one place where I think it's very easy, and that is that the public interest is the best interest of our children. There can't be any argument about that. We could argue about other things. When Congress created the Broadcasting Act, it took care of only one particular group of citizens, namely themselves, politicians. The only people that are currently protected by the Communications Act are candidates for public office who are guaranteed equal time, guaranteed the right to buy time at the cheapest possible rates. I want children to get the same attention that the Congress has given to themselves.
Newton Minow, he's co-author with Craig LeMay of the new book Abandoned in the Wasteland, Children, Television, and the First Amendment. This is Fresh Air.